Hello?
Hello?
This London Johnson, I had a call from you, and I tried to reply to it a couple of times, Savannah and different places, and they said you were traveling, and I got to traveling last night. Just got down here to meet the Prime Minister of Canada this morning, and I had a moment. I thought maybe we better try to reply to your call.
Well, I certainly appreciate your return the call, and I don't want to take but just a minute or so of the time. First, I want to thank you for that great State of the Union message. It was really a marvelous presentation. I think we're on the way now towards great society.
I'll tell you what our problem is. We've got to try with every force at our command, and I mean every force, to get these education bills that go to those people under $2,000 a year income, $1.5 billion, and this poverty that's $1.5 billion, and this health that's going to be $900 million next year, right at the bottom. We've got to get them passed before the vicious forces concentrate and get them a coalition that can block them. Then we have got to, so we won't divide them all and get them hung up in a filibuster. We've got to, when we get these big things through that we need, Medicare, education, I've already got that hearing started, the 22nd in the House, 26th in the Senate. Your people ought to be very, very diligent in looking at those committee members that come from urban areas that are friendly to you, to see that those bills get reported right out, because you have no idea, it's shocking to you, how much benefits they will get. There's $8.5 billion this year for education, compared to $700 million when I started. So you can imagine what effort that's going to be. And this one bill is $1.5 billion. Now, if we can get that, and we can get a Medicare, we ought to get that by February. We get our poverty. That will be more than double what it was last year. Then we've got to come up with the qualification of voters. That will answer 70% of your problems. If you just clear it out everywhere, make it age and read and write. No tests on what Chaucer said, or Browning's poetry, or constitutions, or memorizing, or anything else. And then you may have to put them in the post office. Let the postmaster, that's a federal employee that I control, who they can say is local, he's recommended by the congressman, he's approved by the senator. But if he doesn't register everybody, I can put a new one in.
Yeah.
And it's not an outside Washington influence. It's a local man. But they can just all go to the post office like they buy a stamp. Now, I haven't thought this through, but that's my general feeling. And I've talked to the Attorney General, and I've got them working on it. I don't want to start off with that any more than I do with 14B, because I wouldn't get anything else.
Yeah.
Dude, and I don't want to publicize it. But I wanted I wanted you to know the outline of what I had in mind.
Yes. Well, I remember you mentioned it to me the other day when you met at the White House, and I've been very diligent in making this statement.
Well, your statement was perfect about the vote's important, very important, and I think it's good to talk about that. And I just don't see how anybody can say that a man can fight in Vietnam, but he can't vote in the post office.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. President, I'll tell you the main thing I wanted to share with you. Really rolled out of conversations that I've had with all of the civil rights leaders, I mean, the head of the civil rights organization.
Yeah.
As well as many people around the country that I have traveled to. We have a strong feeling that it would mean so much to First, the health of our whole democracy, but to the Negro and to the nation to have a Negro in the cabinet before the business really be a great step forward for the nation, for the Negro, for our international image, and to do so much to give many people a lift who need a lift now, and I'm sure that it could give a new sense of dignity and self-respect to millions of Negroes who, millions of Negro youth who feel that they don't have anything to look forward to.
I agree with that. I have not publicly shouted from the housetop, but I have had them sit in with me. The first move I made was to put one on the Security Council and to put one in the charge of every bit of the information and went to all of the 120 nations and take him out of an important ambassador post. And I am trying my best to get the housing and urban and city problems, which is the number one problem in America as I see it, made into a cabinet post. I have a good chance of getting it done unless I get tied in with the racial thing. I'm going to concentrate all of the executive power I can to get that done. I'm pretty halfway committed to putting in Weaver, who I consider to be a very able administrator and done a good job, and who we respect pretty highly. I'm trying to bring in others as assistants and deputies. I talked to them no longer than 2 hours ago about trying to get one in charge of maybe African affairs if Williams left. I don't know whether you know him or not, but I'm just giving consideration. I don't want to get it around, but it's this fella Carter that runs the African desk for the Peace Corps.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know him?
I don't know him well.
What? He's very, very able, and we've got George Weaver over in the Labor Department, and I'm bringing him in just as fast as I can. I gave Carl Rowan the top job I would guess that 8 out of the 10 people I talked to felt like that I had problems there, but up to now, he sits with the Security Council on everything. He participates just like Secretary of State. And I'm going to, I don't want to make a commitment on it because I don't want to get tied down to the Congress, but I'm going to shove as strong as I can to get the biggest department there, housing, urban affairs, city, transportation, everything that comes in that department that involves the urban areas of America into one department. And then if I can get that done without having to commit one way or the other, my hope would be that I could put the man in there, and probably it would be Weaver, because I think we have a more or less a moral obligation to a fellow that's done he's done a good job, and he hasn't disappointed anybody. If we put somebody into a job and he failed, we lose 3 steps when we go ahead one.
Sure.
And I haven't had any of that, if you'll notice it. We haven't had any mistakes or any corruption or any scandals of any kind, and I've moved them in, by the wholesale, both women and men.
Yes. Well, this is very encouraging, and I was, as I said, very concerned about this, and I know how others have been mentioning that what this could mean. Another great step for a great society.
I have seen where they considered Whitney Young for a place with a top job with Shriver. He's running 2 shows, and maybe as a kind of associate director with Shriver with the poverty group. I thought that ought to get underway a little bit. I don't know what Shriver said about it. I have a very high regard for Whitney. I like him. I honestly don't feel that with Roy Wilkins or with you or with Randolph or with the man from CORE that meets with us. I don't really think I have a moral obligation to any of them like I have to Weaver, who has been in there. And it's kind of like you being assistant pastor of your church for 10 years with the understanding of your deacons that you would be take over. And then they lose and they don't get to make a pastor. And then you continue to carry on. And then finally, when the good day comes, they say, well, you get back, sit at the second table. I just don't feel like saying that to Weaver. Now, Weaver's not my man. I didn't bring him in. He's Kennedy man. But I just think that there'd be a pretty revolutionary feeling about him. Carl Rowan's not my man. He's a Kennedy man. But he's got the biggest job in government, and it's a cabinet job. He sits with the cabinet every time. He sits with the Security Council every time. And I did it the first month I was in office.
Yeah.
I don't throw it around to cause him to be attacked by his appropriations, because the Southerners handle him. McClellan handles his appropriation. But after we get by pretty well this year and I can get this reorganization through, I will not only have people like Weaver and Carter and undersecretaries places, but we'll have Rowing head there, and we'll have Weaver and perhaps some other folks on the order of Whitney and whoever y'all thinks good.
Well, we think very highly of Whitney.
I do too.
Play a role.
I do too. You know, he's worked very closely in our equal employment, and he's done a very good job in about 60 cities where his people have branches on employment. And I rather think that there's been substantial progress, not enough, but I rather think there's been substantial progress with industry on a higher level, don't you?
I think so. There's no doubt about it.
Every corporation I talk to, and I talked to about 30 of them yesterday, they are looking for Negroes that can do the job that a George Weaver does, or a Carl Rowan does, or a fellow like Weaver does. If we have some of them, and if you have some of them, and you get them to Hobart Taylor, we can find companies that will use men of that quality. Then when they get in, they can look after the ones below them like you're looking after your people. There's not going to be anything, though, Doctor, as effective as all of them vote.
That's right. Nothing.
That'll get you a message that all the eloquence in the world won't bring, because the fellow will be coming to you then instead of you calling him.
And it's very interesting, Mr. President, to notice that the only states that you didn't carry, the South, five dozen states, have less than 40% of the Negroes registered to vote. Very interesting to notice that. I think the professor at the University of Texas in a recent article brought this out very clearly. So it demonstrates that it's so important to get Negroes registered to vote in large numbers in the South, and it will be this coalition of the Negro vote and the moderate white vote that will really make the new South.
That's exactly right. I think it's very important that we not to say that we're doing this and we not do it just because it's Negroes and whites, but we take the position that every person born in this country, when he reaches a certain age, that he have a right to vote, just like he has a right to fight, and that we just extend it, whether it's a Negro, whether it's a Mexican, who it is. And number two, I think that we don't want special privilege for anybody. We want equality for all, and we can stand on that principle. But I think if you can contribute a great deal by getting your leaders and you yourself taking very simple examples of discrimination, where a man's got to memorize Longfellow, whether he's got to quote the first 10 amendments, or he's got to tell you what Amendment 15, 16, 17 is, and then ask them if they know, and show what happens. And some people don't have to do that, but when a Negro comes in, he's got to do it. And if we can just repeat and repeat and repeat, I don't want to follow Hitler, but he had an idea. That if you just take a simple thing and repeat it often enough, even if it wasn't true, why, people accept it. Well, now, this is true, and if you can find the worst condition that you run into in Alabama, Mississippi, or Louisiana, or South Carolina, where, I think one of the worst I ever heard of is the president of the school at Tuskegee, or the head of the government department there, or something, being denied the right to cast a vote. And if you just take that one illustration and get it on radio and get it on television and get it on in the pulpits, get it in the meetings, get it every place you can, pretty soon the fellow that didn't do anything but follow, drive a tractor, he'll say, well, that's not right, that's not fair. Yeah. And then that will help us on what we're going to shove through and in.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that.
And if we do that, we'll break through as, it'll be the greatest breakthrough of anything, not even accepting this 64 Act. I think the greatest achievement of my administration, I think the greatest achievement in foreign policy, I said to a group yesterday, was a passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. But I think this will be bigger, because it'll do things that even that 64 Act couldn't do.
Well, Mr. President, I certainly appreciate your giving me this time, and certainly appreciate getting your ideas on these things. But that I just want to share it with you, and I wanted you to know that we have been feeling, but we had not set on any particular person. We felt it Bob Weaver, Whitney Young, or Ralph, but somebody like that.
Every one of those people have my respect, and. What you do is this. You just say to them that I'm not going to send a message to the Congress and say that if you will give me this power, I will do this as a trade, because I think that would do us all damage. But if I can get my urban and housing affair, you know what my intentions are.
Yeah.
And I've got a pretty good cabinet. As far as I know, I'm going to keep them all, probably except maybe the Secretary of Treasury. I don't know what's going to happen to the Attorney General. I've given a good deal of thought to folks like Abe Fortas, a good deal of thought to folks like Clark Clifford, a good deal of thought to Katzenbach, a good deal of thought to all of those folks are pretty liberal, and they're right on our question. I've appointed John Doerr in the charge of the department over there. But I think most of the others are planning to stay, and I need them on these big programs, health and education and defense and state. But the one thing we want to do is shove through our housing reorganization and put them in charge of the cities.
Yeah.
Then New York City's got to come. Sit down and talk to these people. Chicago's got to come. New Orleans got to come. Atlanta's got to come. If they don't, they just can't move. And then I think we'll have a good man that's trained, that's come up through the ranks, that's merit, that's not on account of color, not on account of anything else, but he'll be there.
Yeah. Well, this is wonderful. I certainly appreciate it.
But two things you do for us now. You find the most ridiculous illustration you can on voting and point it up and repeat it and get everybody else to it. Second thing is, please look at that Labor Committee in the House and Senate. Please look at that Health Committee. Please look at that Immigration Committee. And let's us try to get health and education and poverty through the first 90 days.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be done. That just depends on our absolute support.
Whitney's group can go to talking to them, and Roy's group can, and your group can. And they ought to tell the Ryan of New York, and they ought to tell the so-and-so from Philadelphia, and they ought to tell so-and-so from Atlanta, please get this bill reported. Because I don't think you have any conception of the proportion of assistance that comes to your people in these bills. I haven't pointed that out. I haven't stressed it.
But I know this, that they will be, they have been, and will be of even more tremendous help.
You can figure out, though, what $8 billion in education, what $1 billion in health, and what $1.5 billion in poverty do if it goes to people who earn less than $2,000 a year. Now, do you know who earns less than $2,000, don't you?
That's right. Yes, sir. But it will certainly be a great movement. We've just got to work hard.
And I'm part of this administration, but we talked about what we were going to do 3 years. And we had to do it the fourth. We passed 51 bills last year. Now, I've got those messages up there. The first time any president, by January the 15th, has ever had a half dozen messages for the Congress. Most of them don't even have their State of the Union until after the inauguration.
Yeah, that's right.
But they're there, and they're ready for them to go to work, and we're not just going to talk. If they'll vote, I'm ready. We've got our recommendations. And we talked the first 3 years of our administration. We promised, and we held it up, and people were getting be pretty disillusioned, I think, when I finally beat the Rules Committee and got civil rights out.
Yeah, I know.
I think that you might have had a lot more revolution in this country than you could handle if we had had that civil rights stay in that Rules Committee under Judge Smith.
That's right. Oh, that's a disillusion. It's serious.
Well, we talked about it 3 years, you know. But we just did something about it. So that's what we got to do now, and you get in there and help us.
Well, I certainly will, and you know you can always count on that.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. God bless you. Thank you. There were those who said that we would get here only over their dead bodies.
Well, talk.
All the world today knows that we are here and we are standing before the forces of power in the state of Alabama saying we ain't gonna let nobody turn us around. Today I want to tell the city of Selma.
Tell them, Doctor.
Today I want to say to the state of Alabama.
Yes, sir.
Today I want to say to the people of America and the nations of the world that we are not about to turn around.
Yes, sir.
We're on the move now.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we're on the move and no wave of racism can stop us.
Yes, sir.
And the burning of our churches will not deter us.
Yes, sir.
The bombing of our homes will not dissuade us.
Yes, sir.
The beating and killing of our clergymen and young people will not divert us.
Yes, sir.
The wanton release of their known murderers will not discourage us. We're on the move now.
Yes, sir.
Like an idea whose time has come.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Not even the marching of mighty armies can halt us.
Yes, sir.
We are moving to the land of freedom.
Yes, sir.
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir.
However frustrating the hour, it will not be long,
no, sir.
Because truth crushed to earth will rise again.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long?
How
not long.
How long?
Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne.
Yes, sir.
Yet that scaffold sways the future.
Yes,
behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
Yes, sir.
How long?
Not long.
Not long. Because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yes, sir.
He's trampling out the village where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword.
Yes, sir.
His truth is marching on.
Yes, sir.
He has sounded forth the trumpet
that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah.
Yes.
Yes, President Johnson?
Yes.
This is Martin King.
Yes.
How do you do, sir?
Fine.
Glad to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I was calling because we are very concerned about the McCullough Amendment in the House, and I want to get your advice on this and see what we can do to really block this serious development which is standing in the way of everything. In the voting field. I talked with the Attorney General earlier this morning, and he had some concerns about the closing of the vote. And we are very much concerned about it because this would be a very serious setback. I'm sure you'll be with the ramifications of it.
Yes, if I can speak to you in confidence, I don't want to be in the position of trying to influence or pressure anyone, but I'd be glad to. I think that we're confronted with the realistic problem that we've faced all through the years, combination of the South and the Republicans. The Republicans have got new leadership. They've kicked out Halleck, and there's a great challenge to that leadership between Ford and a fellow named Laird of Wisconsin, who was Goldwater's choice to be chairman of the platform committee. And those people have got a substitute, which is a very dangerous one. They tried in the Senate to get a big fight started over which way to repeal the poll tax. There were two ways, and Katzenbach thought one of them would be constitutional because he thought he could get it in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas by challenging them in the courts, and he couldn't get it in Vermont. And so if he had a blanket repeal, it would all go out, but if he had an individual thing, he could get rid of it. I told him to get rid of the poll tax any way in the world he could constitutionally without nullifying the whole law. I didn't want him to say I wrote a bad law, it wouldn't stand up. And so they got some of them started over there, and they got a challenge to it, and some of the boys wanted to go a little further and help a little more, and really it was the best judgment we had. Instead of helping more, it would help less. But anyway, finally we got it solved in the Senate, and it was acceptable, and it worked out. I got over to the House, and they've tried every way in the world they could. The first thing they did is they went to the forces that are on our side and said, well, you've got to repeal the poll tax outright, which means you repeal Vermont. And Vermont is not a discriminatory tax, and therefore the court wouldn't hold it, and you wouldn't do any good. But they got McCormick, and they got the real friends that we have to go all the way, hoping that that would get the job done for them later on and would hold up the legislation. I think the civil rights leadership is coming around now to see the problem that we all have, and if they don't have much confidence in the Attorney General, they're going to be in trouble anyway, because he's the man we have to try to rely on to help us. And I picked him for that problem because he and Doar and the others had demonstrated that they had the confidence in the leadership. There's been nobody really around here shoving it. I've done the best I could, but they hit me on different sides, and the press is kind of Vietnam or the Dominican Republic or some mistake here, some mistake there, and I'm getting kind of cut up a little bit, and Wilkins is having a national convention, and you're somewhere else, and I called Meany to ask him to help. He'd gone to Europe. I called Reuther. He won't be back till August. I called Joe Rao and said, for God's sakes, you try to get in here before it's too late. We're all off celebrating and doing something else, and they're gonna put a package together that I can see on it. But the Republicans are going to hold pretty well. They're going to quit the Negroes. They will not let the Negro vote for them. They just, every time they get a chance to help out a little, they'll blow it. And they could help out here, and they could elect some good men in suburban districts and in cities. But they haven't got that much sense. That's why they're disintegrating as a party. So they're going to wind up being pretty solid. Then they're going to get the Southerners. And to put the two together, it'll probably be within 10 votes of count. Now, when I went up with my message, I could have probably passed it by 75. But it's deteriorating, and the other day they almost beat my rent subsidy, which is very important to the working groups and the poor people, because when a man pays 25% of his income for rent, we'll say a man makes $200 a month in New York City working in a bakery shop. He pays $50 a month rent, and his rent costs him maybe $67. Well, the government will come in after 25%, which is $50 of his $200. They'll pay the other $17.50 themselves. And it's the most modern idea we've had. It takes care of lots of families, but they beat me. I'll beat them 208 to 202. But I had to work all night the night before, and we called 90 people, and it was just the struggle of a lifetime. And so he gets the congressman from the 13 old Confederate states, and he puts 100 with 150 Republicans, and that gives him 250. And 250 is a good majority of 435. So we get some of them away from him. I'll get a few from Texas away from him, and we'll get a few from Tennessee away from him, the Confederate states, but he'll still get 70, 80 of them, and unless we can pull some of the Republicans away, why, we are in trouble and we are dangerous. And even if we do, we get a bill in conference. Now, when he gets in conference with this House insisting on repealing blank the poll tax, repealing it in blank, we think the court will not uphold us in that. We think that's unconstitutional. We've said so. But we can't avoid it because our own friends have bought it, and they want to be stronger for the Negro than Nick Katzenbach is. So we got to pass it that way. Now, the smart thing to do, if we had people that would all stay with us and follow leadership and get in, and when the ball goes through the center or around the end, would follow it, would be to get some language that the leadership conference would agree on and go in and see McCormick and our friends and say, now, let's take this language that the Senate will accept without it going to conference. So we can go on and get this bill passed and start registering our people and get them ready to vote next year. That's what we need to do. But they're playing us, and we are not parliamentary smart enough. If you want to be honest now, you ask my advice, I'm just telling you. You're either going to have confidence in me and in Katzenbach, or you ought to pick some leader you do have and then follow. I started out on this vote bill last November, right after the election. I called them down and told them I was going to do it. And I called you down here and told you what I was going to do. And I went before the Congress, made a speech, and asked them to work every weekend. Then we all went off. They haven't had any heat except from me, and they're getting tired of the heat from me. They don't like for me to be asking for rent one day and poverty the next day and education the next day and voting rights the next day. And they know I can't defeat them out there in their district in Michigan or some other place. So I'm just fighting the battle the best I can. I think I'll win it, but it's going to be close and it's going to be dangerous. I tell them all that this is a very dangerous thing, and I've been at this business 35 years, and I got a wonderful response on my speech at Howard. I've had it printed. I've sent out to all the leaders over the country. I've got them writing their congressmen and their senators. But I cannot influence the Republicans. Now, the people that can influence the Republicans are men like the local chapters of CORE or NAACP or your group in New York and these states where you've got a good many Negro voters, and you've got to say to them, now, we're not Democrats. We're going to vote for the man that give us freedom. We don't give a damn whether it's Abraham Lincoln or Lyndon Johnson. And we're going to know, and we're smart enough to know, and we're here watching you. And we won't see how you go through that televote, and we won't see how you answer on that roll call. Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Illinois, California. And I told Joe Rao that, and I said, now, don't come back to me after it's defeated and say, well, the president didn't give us leadership, because I'm sounding a warning. And you people put out a story Sunday. And that story says that there'll be less than a dozen votes difference. Now, they counted a good many Southerners voting with us. We think we'll lose some of those dozen that they give us. But we're going to try to pick up some more Republicans. That's where you got to pick them up. You know, you're trying to pick up fellow Mississippi, Alabama, Virginia, those places. We'll pick up one or two from Florida. We'll pick up some from Texas. But the place you got to pick them up is Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, New York. Now, you get a fellow like Lindsey, he's running for mayor, and he's going to be with us. But you won't get a dozen Republicans. And we've got to get, ought to get 25 of them, or they ought to be defeated. And I don't know. I have the problem, you know, my practical political problem in the Senate. They turn it, Bobby Kennedy and Teddy were for the bill of blanket repeal of the poll tax. I told the Attorney General to repeal it any way in the world he could, as quickly as he could, that I would like from the vote at 18, and I would like to repeal the poll tax. And he came up with his lawyers, and he says that the best way to repeal it is to establish discrimination, and I can establish it in all the states but Vermont. But they'll bring the case on Vermont, and that'll be the case that they'll take to the court. And they will not hold that it's discriminatory in Vermont, because it's not. It doesn't even apply to the poor. And he said, I'll lose him there. Now, these boys are not good lawyers, and they just won't stand up. So I have to take his judgment. But I didn't get out and quarrel about it one way or the other. But the Senate finally followed the Attorney General when they understood it, and even the boys themselves did. And that passed the Senate. But while they were talking about it, McCormick was afraid that somebody would be stronger for the Negro than he was. So he picked up the Kennedy argument that made the Senate over in the House. So he came out red hot for a complete repeal. So he and the Attorney General are on opposite sides now. But the Attorney General's got no choice, because the Speaker's going to put it in there. So that's going to be a different bill from the Senate bill. So then if we beat off McCullough, if we win with him, we still got one bill in the Senate and one in the House. That's what the Southerners, that are smart parliamentarians, want us to do. They want your wife to go one direction and you to go the other. Then the kids don't know which one to follow. So they've got that happen. Then we go to a conference. And suppose we get them all in a room and you come and talk to them and everybody else talk to them and said, please get your agreement. We're willing to follow the Attorney General. You get them agreed on it. Then they got to go back to Judge Smith to get him to give a rule to get the conference report up. That just makes it, we'll never have to do that, because that he won't give it. So then we got to notify him and then give him 21 days notice. They want to get out of here Labor Day, and they're playing for that time. Now, they've been doing that for 35 years that I've been here, and I've been watching them do it. And the only times that we beat them is when I beat them in 57, and when I beat them in 60, and when I beat them in 63. And this year we got to beat them again, but that's what they're doing, and you can't beat them unless you know what they're doing. And that's about it. So I would say there are about two things that ought to be done. You ought to have the strongest man that can speak for you, and the most knowledgeable legislative-wise, authorized to speak and authorized to tell people like the Speaker that what you want. You don't want this fight going on, and you ought to find out who you believe you can trust. If you can trust me, if you can trust the Attorney General, if you can't trust us, well, I trust Teddy Kennedy or whoever you want to trust, and then get behind them and see that they take the thing, because I'll give every bit, ounce of energy and ability, if any, that I have to passing the most effective bill can be written. You sure have, and you helped, I think, dramatize and bring it to a point where I could go before the Congress in that night session, and I think that was one of the most effective things that ever happened. But you had worked for months to help create the sentiment that supported it. Now the trouble is that fire's gone out. We've got a few coals on it, and we've got to put some more cedar back on it and put a little coal oil on it.
Well, I'll get back to work, and I'll be talking to Roy.
Roy sent them a wire yesterday, but they just put a wire in their file. What they got to do is have you and Roy and Whitney Young and Phil Randolph and Farmer and some of these fellows, any of you can work together, to come sit in the hotel room and talk to your people and get your reports and watch it for a day or two and be able to talk to men like Speaker McCormick and like the majority leader and tell them what you want them to do. Because this morning the Vice President, now he is very, very strong for you, and he's heart and soul is in this. Now he said, please, man, let's don't go to conference and let Judge Smith keep us another 21 days. Let's don't get in a fight among ourselves. And the Attorney General is right, and let's get language, and the leadership conference is ready to go along on modified language, and I've got it here in my pocket. But McCormick said, oh, no, they'll do it, and when we do it, then they'll come in and blame me, and I'm going to go for the strongest thing I can go for so nobody can blame me. I said, well, what are you going to do when the court holds it's no good and throws it out? Where are you going to be? Well, that'd be down the road a long time from now. So that's where we are. So I think my recommendation would be that you get the best lawyer that you and Roy and the rest of you have, and get him to talk to Katzenbach. And if he has confidence in Katzenbach, follow Katzenbach's legal judgment and come in here and follow my political judgment and see if we can't get a bill passed.